Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Rob McClure,
who stars in Something Rotten, coming to National Theater February 6th through the 18th. Thanks so much for joining us, sir.
Of course, and we're so excited about coming down to D.C. again. My wife and I came down and played the National about 10 years ago at Avenue Q.
Oh, awesome. Which characters were you there in that? Were you the puppets?
I was Princeton and Rod, the sort of like young up-and-comer and the closeted Republican investment banker puppet.
Slightly different than what you're doing here in Something Rotten.
Exactly.
Well, we're glad to have you back. I mean, it's a historic theater. It's a great theater town, so come on.
Yeah.
We're ready. All right, well, you and I know Something Rotten pretty well, but let's say that maybe some of our listeners aren't familiar with it somehow. Hard to believe. 10 Tony nominations. But
yes, exactly.
Give them fill them in just real quick on the premise. It's hilariously set in Shakespeare's time. Take it away.
Yes. Yeah, we always say it takes place during the Renaissance, but that's with a, you know, with a, it's certainly tongue in cheek. There's no like these and thous and language, hoofy language to get by.
Right.
It has a very contemporary sense of humor. It's brought to you by the director Casey Nicholaw, who just did Mean Girls at the National, also did Book of Mormon and Aladdin, so somebody who really knows funny. So the audience can certainly expect to laugh. But I play Nick Bottom, who is a writer sort of competing with Shakespeare, who in our show is quite literally a rock god. It's played by Adam Pascal of original Rent cast fame.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of like the shiny rock star, kind of like a Freddie Mercury, David Bowie kind of guy. And I hate him. As you can imagine, competing with Shakespeare in the Renaissance is not easy. So I head out to a psychic, a soothsayer, to find out what the future of the theater will be, to try and, you know, trump William Shakespeare. And I'm told that it's musical. So my brother and I set out to write the world's first musical through the eyes of this not so reliable fortune teller.
it's such an off the wall in an awesome way sort of premise.
What's so cool about it is that it's an original story. You know, that's what I love about touring with this show. I did the show for the last sort of 8 months on Broadway, and now I've been on tour with it for a year. And the audience is not knowing what to expect is really what makes it so special, because, you know, in a world where adaptations and, you know, revivals are everywhere, something original that the audience really doesn't know what to expect is such a privilege to be able to bring to them, because you know everything, all the surprises they're encountering for the first time.
Absolutely. And when you're talking about how, you know, you hate this sort of rock star Shakespeare who's getting all the love, it reminds me of, what was it, in Amadeus. It's like, you know, Salieri's like, you know, man, I would be a legend in my own time if I wasn't here against Mozart. So it's got
exactly
that kind of vibe.
Right. It is totally that kind of vibe, except through the eyes of sort of a classical musical theater comedy. Which is, you know, huge spectacle numbers and gorgeous costumes. It's just really extraordinary.
Right, yeah. So you mentioned sort of the spectacle of it. Explain what we're going to see visually in the costume and the set design.
Well, the costumes are certainly inspired by the Renaissance. So those sort of like gigantic, you know, dresses and corsets and foofy collars. But also juxtaposed to a sort of like really contemporary sense of humor. So like people rocking out in like this incredible choreography. There's tons of tap dancing in these like sort of gigantic period costumes. Is certainly a workout for us, but the audience loves it. And there are huge production numbers. There are two production numbers in the show, one in Act 1 and one in Act 2, that have been known to get standing ovations in the middle of the show, which I've never been in a show where that happens. And it is one of the most thrilling things in the world when you know, the audience is applauding, and one brave soul stands to their feet, and then everybody goes, and it's so thrilling. The big number in Act 1 is called a musical, and it's when that fortune teller is sort of seeing visions of the future of the theater. And the fun for the audience is getting to pick up on what those visions are while Nick has no idea what he's talking about. So if he sees, I swear to you, a huge hit is going to be Singing Cats, Nick doesn't think that sounds possible, and of course the audience knows what he's talking about. So a lot of the fun is both in the Shakespearean references and the musical references that the audience is in on a lot of those jokes.
That's so great. We're talking about sort of the production numbers, but remind us. Let's say our listeners, they saw it on Broadway back in, God, when did it come out? It was
two and a half years ago.
Okay, 2.5 years ago. Awesome. Well, remind. Let's say they missed it, or even if they saw it then, remind them some of the musical numbers. Do you have a personal favorite in Act 1 or 2?
My wife. So I'm actually on tour with my wife playing my wife, which makes touring so much more fun because we're getting on this adventure together.
Yeah.
And she plays B, sort of my, I'll let her tell you a little bit more about her. But she has one of my favorite songs in the show. It's called Right Hand Man. Mm. And it's sort of like through the eyes of a woman in the Renaissance who just wants to help. And her sort of stubborn husband letting her to a certain extent, and whether or not she has to take matters into her own hands. But she's got this extraordinary song that she sings the hell out of every night. And then musical is, of course, the huge production number in Act One. I get a great song called God, I Hate Shakespeare. And that's when I always feel like I win over the members of the audience who are maybe not into musicals or Shakespeare. You know, we like to say with our show that if you like musicals and Shakespeare, you're going to love our show. But if you hate musicals and Shakespeare, so does my character.
That's when they will vicariously live through you.
Exactly. Well, there really is, in addition to the referential nature of the show, there's a lot of really good play there, too. For people who are maybe not in on all the jokes with the referential nature of musicals and Shakespeare, but they can certainly root for the underdog. And there's a huge comedy within the play that they can appreciate, even if they don't necessarily get all of the references. But my character is sort of the everyman. So maybe the husbands who are drugged to the theater by, you know, members of their family who have subscriptions. The second I come out and start making fun of Shakespeare, I very quickly win them over because, you know, the show pays tribute lovingly to those things, but it also lovingly pokes fun at them as well. So nobody's safe.
That's great. And so it's interesting to me. It's almost self-reflective in a way because, you know, it's about these two brothers, Nick and Nigel Bottom, but it's also written like music and lyrics by two brothers, right? Kerry and Wayne Kirkpatrick?
Yeah. Kerry and Wayne Kirkpatrick. We like to say it's a musical about two brothers writing a musical, written by two brothers writing a musical. but they're geniuses. Kerry Kirkpatrick, who wrote the book and some of the lyrics, he is a screenwriter who wrote the screenplay to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Chicken Run, and so certainly knows comedy. And his brother Wayne Kirkpatrick is a Grammy-winning songwriter who wrote Eric Clapton's "Change the World,"
as
well as a bunch of other songs that everybody's heard. And this was their first stab at a musical, and it was a pretty successful, considering 10 Tony nominations on their first try out. So the team of the two of them and Casey Nicholaw has certainly struck gold.
Absolutely. And if it wasn't for a little thing called Fun Home, it probably would have won.
Exactly right. Well, you know, there's something for everybody in all those shows. That season, this show certainly was sort of the big splashy musical comedy of that season that take home, a bunch of nominations.
Absolutely. All right. Well, one more before we pass it off to your wife here. Tell me what it's been like working with Adam Pascal, because we all, you know, know him and love him from Rent. He actually joined us for an interview about a year ago or so when he came to.
Yeah, he's the man. He's like, what's so funny is about Adam is that, you know, the audience knows him as this rock god, and he looks unbelievable in these costumes, and you know, he's wearing these like crazy shiny metallic, just rock god outfits. But we lovingly call him Dadum because he's such like a morale. He's like so calm and sweet backstage. He's just like this huge presence. What's so funny is he gets to be really silly in this show. If you know Adam, if you get to know him, that's so much closer to who he is than sort of the brooding, pop god. To see him be funny and silly and goofy is, and he would be the first to tell you that that's far closer to who he is as a person than the sort of a super serious characters that he tends to play.
Absolutely. And who plays your brother, Josh Grissetti?
Josh Grissetti, okay. Yeah. A lot of Broadway aficionados will know Josh from It Should Have Been You. He had a great star turn in that. He's a great actor. And, you know, what's so funny is for a long time we had heard of each other because everybody kept on saying to both of us separately, hey, do you know so-and-so? You guys need to play brothers in something. That's all we kind of knew about each other is that everyone was telling us we had to play brothers. So finally the right opportunity came. And in the relationship on the show, we are sort of co-writers. And I'm sort of the hot-headed, really ambitious one. And he's sort of the softer poet at heart who is sort of the genius behind what the two of them come up with. And the sort of like sibling rivalry between the two of them is a large part of the plot.
That's so great. All right. Well, we appreciate you taking the time. We got like a good 10 minutes with you. Now, if you don't mind, ladies awesome. And gentlemen, we're going to hand the phone over to the wife who plays his wife.
Yeah. Here's Maggie Lakis.
All right. Thank you.
Hello.
Hey, Maggie.
Hi.
I think this is so cool that, you know, you guys can just literally pass the phone off and we'll just keep talking to another cast member.
Yeah.
That's so great. And not only are you married in real life, you are in the show as well. How does that actually, does that inform it at all?
Absolutely. I mean, we know each other better than any other person on the planet. So we automatically have that, you know, history and that chemistry to play a married couple. There's no awkwardness during rehearsal. Usually when you get a script and it says you have to kiss someone, there's like, you know, two or three rehearsals in where you're like, okay, are we going to do this today? And for us, it's just not an issue, you know, it's no big deal. Not awkward at all. But yeah, we have a great time. It's actually a gift. We love working together.
Awesome. How did you guys, before we move pivot back to the show, just while we're on this topic, how did you guys actually meet?
We met doing a production of Grease. He played Duty and I played Frenchie.
Nice. And, was this on Broadway or where was this?
No, it was in New Jersey. It was a theater that no longer exists called Lenape Regional Performing Arts Center in Marlton, New Jersey. And so we met doing that and became really good friends at first and then started dating and moved on from there.
That's so great. I love it. All right, back to the show. Tell us a little bit about your character and how you factor in here.
Yes, I play Bee Bottom, which is Nick's wife, and she can tell that he's struggling because she knows him, but he's not communicating with her, and he's not letting her help. And, you know, in any relationship, you kind of want some equity, you want to be partners, and she just is trying to convince him to just not be so prideful and to let her help him. And, of course, he doesn't listen, so she kind of has to go behind his back in ways that she can help him, but being a woman in that time period, it's a little difficult, so she has to wear all sorts of disguises and be a little bit sneaky about it. And it's so fun because I get to play a character who plays different characters.
Right, right.
So there's some layers there that are a lot of fun.
Like performances within the performance.
Exactly.
That's awesome. So I asked Rob this same question about what his favorite numbers were. Which one do you think he said? And then which one is yours?
I mean, musical is usually a big favorite just because it's such a showstopper.
Right. That's Nostradamus.
Nostradamus' song where he sees his visions of the future of theater, and the future is musical. So he sings a song about that. And I mean, I think that's my favorite too. I'm not in it, but I get to hear it every night, and I watch it from the wings sometimes, or watch it from a monitor, and I get to hear the audience's response to it, which is pretty incredible. And then there's a song at the end of Act Two, which name I don't want to say because I feel like it might give away a little bit of a joke.
Okay.
But it's a big production number that I enter shortly thereafter, so I kind of get to watch it every night, and that's so much fun for me.
Awesome. It'll be the number that shall not be named because we don't want to spoil it.
Yes, exactly.
I know your big number you get to do too is Right Hand Man, and then there's a reprise of it too in the second act.
Yes.
What's it like singing that one? Why do you enjoy that one?
Oh, it's a great song. I mean, it really is. I keep saying it's a gift, but that song is a gift as well. It is so many times where people tell me when I get to the stage door that is their favorite song, and it, you know, I love it. It's fits where I sing, so I enjoy singing it. It doesn't give me stress. I just think it's so well written. It has some great internal rhymes, and the message of it is great. It's just saying, hey, listen to me. I'm not judging you. Just let me help you. And I want to. I want to help you. It's not about, you know, about you're letting me down, so I have to do something. It's I want to be helpful. It's just a great song, and I love singing it every night.
Now, isn't the idea in the premise is that musicals don't exist at this point, right? Like, they're writing the first one, right? Okay.
Yes, that they looked into the future, and it seems ridiculous to them, but they're like, they kind of see how it can work, and they go about trying to do that, but they don't know what to do it about. So then they're trying to figure out what would a musical be about. So they try a couple different couple of different premises before settling on the one they settled on, which is the one I can't say.
Which is all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to make a something, you got to break a few eggs. All right. So,
yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So, but talk about then the idea. Imagine if these guys never came up with this back in 1590s. What would the world look like, Maggie, with if there were no musicals?
If there were no musicals. Oh, gosh. I can't imagine it. Well, it'd be a lot less fun and colorful because you wouldn't need such splashy costumes. And then if there'd be no dance numbers, which would also be just sad.
Just depressing.
I feel like it'd be a sad place without musicals. I mean, and, you know, and I will say for musicals, they can sometimes get a bad rap as being frivolous and silly and ridiculous. But it's very difficult to do well because in order to get an audience to be on your side so much that when you start singing, they're with you, is a testament to the actors, that they can convince you that the only logical step emotionally for this person is to start singing, because that's supposed to be the idea, is it comes so heightened that you must burst into song. So if you can get the audience to go with you, I think that's made fun of a bit in this show, but it also celebrates it. And I think the art form of musical theater is actually a very, very tricky and difficult one to get right. And this show celebrates while making fun of that. So we like to say, if you love musicals, you'll love our show. And if you hate musicals, you'll love our show.
And if you love Shakespeare or hate Shakespeare, you'll probably love it too.
Exactly. Same thing. My sister saw it a few weeks ago, and she's very well read, and she got so many Shakespeare references that a lot of people might not get.
Oh yeah, well, you're never gonna get the frivolous argument from me. I freaking love musicals, so but it is, you know, that's nice to know. I can throw that to our listeners, because maybe there's some that maybe they think they don't. Maybe this will be an entryway in for them.
Oh yeah, it's a good starter musical, I think, because we do have people say, like, I normally don't like musicals, but I love this. Because, you know, there's a great laugh line right at the beginning of the song musical talking about people just singing, you know, and it gets a good response every night.
Well, it sounds like it's just a clever, you know, what's so great about it is it, like you're saying, it not only, it sort of deconstructs the musical while also defending and, you know, glorifying it.
Exactly.
It walks that line pretty nicely.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, I guess sort of in closing, how excited are you to come down to the nation's capital, where it's a very cultured town down here, and National Theater's a very historic spot?
Oh, we're super excited. We live in Philadelphia, so it's not too far from where we live.
Oh, my God. Go Eagles for you guys, right? Sunday.
Yeah, oh, my gosh. Yeah, we're up in New England now, so we're going to be Eagles fans in New England during the Super Bowl, so that should be awkward. But yeah, we're super excited to go to DC. We've played the National before with Avenue Q. We both, we did that tour when we were just dating. So we've been to that space before. It's such a gorgeous theater. And it's such an amazing historic city. So we'll go to a lot of museums and walk around the mall, hopefully the audience will have a great time.
Oh, we have to, because this piece is going to run like early next week, like right after the Super Bowl's over. So we're going to have to figure out a way to, I'm going to have to mention the whole Philly and New England thing for you guys. But
oh, yeah.
well, if the Eagles win Sunday, how nice will it be? Or if they lose, I guess I'll get a soundbite from either. Are you, how will Something Rotten get, if you don't mind, how will Something Rotten play if they win and then if they lose for you two personally?
Yeah, it'll be, distraction, or it'll be just keeping the party rolling.
Well, for your sake, I'll pull for you guys. who wants to see New England win again? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Come on.
All right. Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you joining us and continue the good work, and we're looking forward to seeing you guys here at National Theater.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you at the show.
Bye-bye.